hip hop and a little bit of a drop, and something's going to go in some other way, and it comes in a direction that goes in the squiggly little circle that goes around and around and around, and then it kind of merges with this weird kind of angle thing, and then it's bam, it's a show. We tonight have a gentleman by the name of Chuck Boudreau. I'm pretty sure I pronounced the name correctly. I don't know 100%, but we'll confirm in a second. Hey, Chuck, how's it going?
It's doing good. How's it going, Bill?
It is always amazing. How about yourself?
I'm doing awesome.
Excellent. Did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, you did.
Excellent. Also, I have guests every once in a while that show up, and it's like, ooh, I hate when I pronounce their names wrong. Like,
yeah,
it's,
mine
it's
gets
just
butchered
respect
all the time, but you've got enough Boudreaux up in Canada that shouldn't be a problem. In fact, that's where my family came from originally. It was part of the Acadian colony, escaped into Quebec after the British decided to oust all the Frenchies. So,
well, I was going to say it sounded a little on the French side.
Yes, it is. Everybody keeps mistaking me for a Cajun, but no, I am a French-Canadian.
Excellent. I've actually had a Cajun on. A couple of them, actually. Yeah. A nice lady. Plays very weird music, but that's all good, right?
Love weird music.
Exactly.
I'll be bored.
So, we know you, I know you, for a couple of things, and that's related to Gen Con and some movie stuff. Now I looked through your IMDb credits and I didn't recognize anything there.
And well, you shouldn't have.
Let's put it this way. Jack knows some of the movies I watch, and the title of one of them actually struck me as I would watch that. You can guess which one.
Either Dead at the Box Office, or actually probably a better one that I worked on, was Beverly Lane, which is a wonderful zombie comedy of people that are stuck in an office as it's being attacked by zombies. And everybody should work on a zombie film at least once, because they're so fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Hey, actually, it's got a fairly good rating.
Yeah, at Beverly Lane, I thought that was a really, really good film. Dead at the Box Office, also a good film. I didn't work a lot on it. I did a little bit of post-production on it, cleaning up the sound, or attempting to clean up the sound. It's one of those where the guy who was doing sound on set was on crack. No, literally, he was on crack. And they everything came out super digitally distorted, and I had to go through and try to clean it up as best possible. And it was a fun experience, and I didn't do much post-production work after doing that one. It was just a mess.
Post
but I love the guy
fun.
Who did it. I love the film itself. The storyline is fun. And there they were, zombies attack a movie theater during a midnight show. So it's...
Okay, now I have to look this one up.
Yeah, it's fun. You would enjoy it.
It's got
some fun twists on things too. So that's, yeah.
Well, it looks like a combination of two other movies that I have seen. What the hell was the one? Cockneys versus Zombies and Stalled.
Have not seen either of those. But
Cockneys versus Zombies is a Cockney movie from Britain, and
kinda
Stalled
that.
Is an Australian movie. Where most of the movie takes place where the guy is stuck in a bathroom stall in an office building. And zombie outbreak occurs.
Well,
in both
of
these.
Yeah, as one does. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. No, I'm going to have to look that one up. No, actually, the one that caught my eye was Starship 2.
Oh, yeah, Starship 2, Rendezvous with Ramses. Yeah.
Yeah, because it kind of triggered me for 2001.
It is a film that has never been completed. And yes, I did co-write it. I also did most of the production sound on it. And it is buried in post-production hell. We made the fatal mistake of an independent filmmaker, which is overwriting your budget. There's so much special effects involved here that... It just was beyond our capability to complete it. That's not to say that somebody isn't still working on it, but it is fun. I tell you, I've watched the kind of the bootleg, not quite finished version of it so many times, I just get lost in it. You know, it is such a fun film.
Cool. So, and as other people have heard me talk about, I love indie films. I love all sorts of B-movies and stuff. Mostly they have to be science fiction, horror, or fantasy. If you get into the happy or sad things, it's like, I don't care about that crap. And I was just thinking about it earlier. It's like, how many other B-movies are there that aren't science fiction, fantasy, or horror? What the hell was that?
I think you're hearing my phone making noise.
That is what I heard. Kind of sounded like a Star Trek noise. Like, what? I didn't beam nobody out or into the show. It's like, damn it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. There isn't much, you know, that's along those lines that doesn't fall into one of those genres, you know? And that's what we do at the Gen Con Film Festival. It's all genre films like that. So we're doing horror films are by far our most popular. I tend to program those mid-evening to after midnight, and that's after the rest of the convention kind of winds down. The convention center itself is pretty much shut down by then, and people are looking for something to do, and why not come see a horror movie, right?
Sure.
So typically what I'll do on Friday nights is I'll have the horror comedy block kind of kick things off, kind of ease us into it. And it's mostly, you know, those are all short films, right? You know, anywhere from like 3 minutes up to about 20, 22 minutes, something like that. That one actually sold out last week. There's no seats available for that one being offered.
Well, that's a good sign.
We got another couple of weeks before the event, so that's good. And then right after that, we have the regular horror block, which, you know, I do, for the fun of it, I'll throw a somewhat comedy type one in the middle of it just to lighten things up a bit, because if you're watching 3 hours or 2 hours or whatever it is of horror shorts, you just might want to have a laugh somewhere in between, you know.
Wait, hold on a sec. You mean people aren't laughing during the regular horror movies? Because I am.
Well,
always.
Okay. That's, they're cheering at places you normally wouldn't expect normal people to cheer. But then again, I don't expect normal people to be in the room. So,
well, yeah. It's horror movies, man. We ain't normal. Well, actually, we're mostly normal. But sometimes we get extra normal. And then sometimes we get extra less normal. As I do that with the side eye, it goes back and forth.
And then after that, I'll have a feature length horror film. I know Saturday night I've got two films that I just stumbled onto, and it's like these things are almost a double feature. And so that's basically what I did. I booked them back to back. We've got one film that is, I don't remember where they produced it, but somewhere in the States. I forget exactly where they're from, but it's basically a band. Kind of starts creating their new album. They're at a very, very remote studio out in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of a converted farm that's been turned into this recording mecca or whatever. And they've taken this piece of classical music that's supposed to be haunted and are trying to incorporate that into their new album. And naturally, it was haunted. And some demon comes and starts randomly killing people, possessing people. Super fun stuff. And then the other
what's the name of this movie?
That movie is, I should have names, shouldn't I? The name of that is is Death Metal.
I might have seen it.
Okay. And then the one that's showing right before that is called Bliss of Evil. And it's
I have not seen that one.
It's an Australian film. It is great. It's another band in a recording studio, and they've got a killer that's stalking them in the studio and has locked the doors and, you know, stuck it. Two band in a studio horror films showing back to back. because that's what you do, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, I've been doing this film festival for like 13 years now. These are the first two I've had that fall into that weird little niche of, you know, bands in a horror film in a you know, locked in a recording studio.
I can throw three more at you.
I bet you can.
Okay, so Idle Hands, which has The Offspring in it, awesome movie.
Okay.
Jessica Alba, I think it's one of her earliest movies or whatever, walks around a lot in a nightie. Awesome movie. Deathgasm, which is another Australian movie. And, oh, there was a third one that was in my head and then went away somewhere. Oh, 666. The one put out the by the actual band Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it's a subgenre, right?
Oh, yeah. It's growing.
Love it.
Ooh,
I love it.
Let's get every heavy metal. Oh, and then all those death metal guys down over in Sweden and Norway and Netherlands and whatever. Every one of their videos is like that. I don't know if you've seen any of them.
I can't say I have, but...
Okay.
It might be something to look up.
Well, it's a little on the sometimes not appropriate for all ages stuff. They have some things called blood sacrifices go on over there sometimes.
Uh-huh. So be careful when you Google that at work then, our kids.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Some of it's fine. Some of it, that's not. Oh, there was another one. Damn it. It was on Netflix. It was a TV series. Crap, I'm getting old. I forget things. So, you had three nights of movie programming. Horror comedy, horror, and horror musical. Did I get that right?
Yeah, it's not really a musical, as in people are singing and, you know, break it out into song. It's just bands that are being stalked by killers or being possessed, and yeah, they do play some music, but it's not like, you know, it's not Roger and Hammerstein, right? So,
who are they?
Exactly. like Rogers and Rammstein scene, you know. So, but
Rammstein,
yeah.
Man, they're messed up, but that's cool.
Another one I've got is showing on Thursday night, which is kind of our kickoff night. Oh no, it's Friday night. It's right after the horror block. Is the Once and Future Smash?
And what
this,
I like the title.
What this is, it's a mockumentary. Which at first I had to. It's a good documentary, and in fact, you get about 20 minutes into it and go, wait a minute, they're making this crap up. And it's about a horror film that was done in the early 70s, late 60s, and nobody remembers ever seeing, like, the second reel of it. So they only remember half the film. And there's... a Hollywood studio that's wanting to do a remake of it. It's like this cult classic thing that everybody talks about, but nobody's actually ever seen. They got tons of cameos from different horror people. Lloyd Kaufman is in it. They're doing cameos.
He's in everything.
Oh, yeah, Lloyd's Lloyd, you know. But, you know, it's just super fun as they're going through all the backstory of this, the making of this film, and why the second reel disappeared, and then all the kind of machinations with the new script, and it's just super fun and so over the top that it just blows your mind. Like I say, the first 15 minutes of it, you're thinking, okay, this is a real documentary, and then finally it just flips a switch to where you're like, no, this is all made up. And then it gets completely beyond that, so which is good. It just kind of builds towards that. So
are all the movies that you bring into the film festival there new movies released recently, or are they a mix of older movies, newer movies, and anything else in between?
They're pretty much new. Right now, I think there's a bit of a backlog still left over from the whole COVID thing. Mm-hmm. So film festivals weren't a thing for about 2 years. So there's some stuff that's still floating around out there that really hasn't shown, but it's probably upwards of 3 to 4 years old now, right? But I don't show things much older than that. Occasionally I'll get something interesting. There's a guy who that I actually knew, the filmmaker, and he did a fan film like a couple of decades ago of Highlander. You know?
Okay.
And so he's finally got this thing put together, and he submits it to me. I'm like, yeah, I can tell it was made several years ago, because first of all, I know the lead actor in it, and I know he doesn't look like that anymore. But you know, it was kind of a great way to give a nod to somebody's past work, right? And we did that with one of our films a few years ago, because you mentioned Starship 2. Well, there was a Starship 1, Rock and Roll Starship, and we actually did show that just before COVID, probably 2018 maybe, we did that. And that's one we made. We actually shot that on Super 8 sound film. So it was actually a film. And yeah, it was cheesy. It was fun. And we learned so much on what not to do for making a movie during that film. Really, really, yeah. Your guest from, it's been almost a month ago, I had Mark Rakeup on, who does the Batmobiles. That was his baby, Rock and Roll Starship and Starship 2. Those are his films. And, we made the one.
He didn't bring either of those up.
Well, of course he didn't. That's why I'm here.
Okay. Well, he wanted to talk about Batmobiles, and it's like, we're going to talk movies, so it's all good. So, speaking of COVID, I mean, obviously, you guys were shut down for a while as well. I don't know, was it like 2 years or just the 1 year?
Well, you know, we didn't have an on-site convention in 2020, but we did have
a virtual.
What everybody came back and said, it was an amazing online virtual experience. Cool. And we did the film festival online that year. And we did a lot of panels online. I mean, yeah, it was a time when everybody was tuning in to see, you know, live streaming concerts, basically people in their home performing because they can't go out, right? I mean, that was what everybody was doing during 2020. So it was perfect for that. And we're still doing a little bit of that online this year. In fact, if you go to the Gen Con website, you'll see there's a Gen Con online. So gencon.com, and then click for the Gen Con online. That's happening at the same time that the on-site convention is happening. And tickets for that are actually free for the online portion. And if you get logged into there, get a ticket, you can go in and request access to see a handful of these films. Actually, most of the films that we're showing are going to be showing online as well. So, cool. Yeah, so it's a free thing. So if you can't make it to Indianapolis, check them out online, say GenCon.com, and then just go to the Gen Con online, and then there's a button there to find events, and you click on it and request access to the film festival. They'll be basically running as a streaming type service during the convention. So it starts on Thursday morning and goes through Sunday evening. All those films will be up, and you can watch them whenever you want. So
you're saying I can watch the movies Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday that weekend?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's obviously some films we can't. They've got distribution reasons and stuff like that they can't be shown online. So it's not everything, but it's a really good sampling of what's out there.
That was actually going to lead into one of my next questions, is about distribution. It's like, how many of these movies do actually have distribution in North America?
You know, in the States, it's really hard to get distribution for a short film.
Uh-huh.
And the lion's share of what we show is short films. But I know they're in Canada. You guys do have actually somewhat of a market for short films, which is which is great.
Yeah.
But like I say, here in the States, not so much. So people ever making money off of a short film, not likely. But as far as distribution for the feature films we show, quite a few of them have gone on to get some form of distribution. You know, that might be, actually a fair number of them have shown up on Prime.
which and, I love for all the bad movies they have.
Yeah, and some of that, the way that works, and I haven't been involved in a while, but the way that used to work, at least, is distribution companies would bundle a bunch of really low-budget films together, and they would sell them as a package to Prime, and that's how they got on there. So the guys hardly make any money
right.
for showing it on Prime, but it
gets exposure.
Yeah. I mean, it's something to go to your investors for your next film to say, well, my last one was on Prime. In fact, you can go watch it on Prime today. And, you know, if it's a good product and if they can pull it up on a service they're already subscribed to, that might be a winner for getting some money for the next film. So
yeah, and it's butts in seats, too. I mean, if you can say, I have this movie that's in presentable in front of a million people, they're going to say, hey, did a million people watch it? No, but 500,000 did, and that's an excellent market.
Yeah, and I don't know what all statistics they get from those streaming services. Do they get just a number of views? Do they get a number of people who tuned out partway through it? I don't know what.
I would suspect they get very strongly. They get a large suite of stats available to them, because I mean that's the kind of stats you can get just from a YouTube channel, and
right.
that's very. Loki.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Loki, the god of mischief. See, I throw in a bit of reference.
Who, by the
there.
Way, is not Loki.
True, exactly. He likes to be in front of the camera. So, there was a question in the chat room. Is the film festival for Gen Con regional bound? Like, is it just local area, or is it worldwide?
So far, it is available anywhere that our sun is shining on.
Okay.
It's globally. There's no restriction on where people can view, which is good because we have filmmakers from literally all over the world. Like I said, we have the one horror film that came in from Australia. We've got people from England all the time submitting. Got a lot of Canadians, which, you know, again, like you said earlier, when you and I were talking offline, it's not that far away, Indianapolis,
nope.
from, you know, from Toronto.
I've driven there.
Yeah. And I've driven the opposite. So there you go. So again, we got people from all over the world that are submitting films. Some of them show up. I remember one year I had a guy that came in from Sydney, Australia. And he was a little disappointed that he wasn't the guy that traveled the furthest, because there was another guy in the room that had flown in from Adelaide. He had to fly an hour to get to Sydney to catch his plane to come over. So, it's sometimes a little bit of a competition to see who's traveled the furthest. But I had another guy that from New Zealand that he literally didn't have the money to come, and he did a crowdfunding to get money to come, and he did. And while
cool.
he was over here, he also, in the middle of our event, he flew up to Toronto for a film festival for one night, and then came back down and finished up our event. There
nice.
You go.
Yeah, one of the things about Canada that's okay, I'm going to say it's better because I'm going to country brag here, is that the art community is much better supported. So it's like if you've got indie product, and when we were talking about horror movies and whatever being indie level, there are a lot of those happy, sad movies that I will never watch that are done up here because people will do them and get the credit for it and then do all the stuff and then go on to better stuff. But they will do more of those non so much horror, hey, here's a happy person, here's a sad person, there's their life kind of movies. Meaning I never watch those.
And Canada has a great national and even based on problems, tax credits and just straight out grants that are available for filmmakers up there. You guys knock it out of the park for supporting the film industry, and you've managed to suck a lot of the U.S. talent up there to make films. So,
well,
it's all good.
A lot of American movies like to be made up here because it's cheaper than down there.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I love how Toronto gets often, hey, it's New York City today. Yep. Okay. Still love my favorite thing was like the film crew was done. They'd messed up a road. They came in the next day to film the shoot. And it's like it was all clean. It's like, what? You guys are too clean. Clean up that shit. What the hell? I love that. That was funny.
So anymore, Atlanta is now doubling for just about every country or every city in the world now.
Did you know Atlanta is the worldwide center for conventions? They have the most convention halls there.
It does not surprise me. I have a tendency to frequent Dragon Con in Atlanta, Labor Day weekend.
Been there a couple times. And,
yeah, it's an amazing event. It's conveniently placed about 3 weeks after Gen Con, which I work Gen Con. I love working Gen Con, but I don't get to relax for 1 minute at Gen Con. I am constantly moving. And for me, 3 weeks after that, going to Dragon Con, I just sit back, relax, enjoy things. Everything happens around me as opposed to me actually doing everything.
So this is the pre-chill before the full-on event.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm sitting here 2 weeks out. Thinking what else needs to be done. And I'm still putting together a bunch of my film panels, which is always a logistical nightmare, because the problem with an event the size of Gen Con, and for those who, I guess we've never covered exactly what Gen Con is, so for those that don't know, look it up. It is the longest running, largest tabletop gaming convention in the world.
Yep.
It was started in 1969 in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. That's where it got its name, Gen Con. It was a wargaming convention because there was no role-playing games at that time.
They were out there. They just weren't Geneva. Out there.
What's that?
They were out there. They just weren't out there. I mean, D&D was released officially, what, in early 70s? Mid-70s?
Yeah. So the guys who started Gen Con are the guys who started D&D, started PSR games.
Yeah.
But they met each other through Gen Con. It was Arneson and Gygax.
Yes, that was it. I couldn't remember their names.
Yeah. Yeah. So Gygax is one of the guys that actually started Gen Con. Arneson visited there. They got to talking and swapping notes and put together the first edition of Dungeons and Dragons. The convention predates the role-playing industry. It's been going ever since. They eventually outgrew Lake Geneva and moved to Milwaukee and then eventually moved to Indianapolis in the 90s. So, and it's been in Indy ever since. One of the guys who owns it now is actually one of the guys that started Magic the Gathering.
Oh, yeah. So, cool.
Yeah. And it's a very interesting industry.
Putting it mildly.
I've learned so much about it over the years because of all the documentaries that I have to watch. because people are putting together these documentaries about the gaming industry, about the history of Gen Con. In fact, I've got one this year. It is actually really good. It's all about how the gaming got started in Gary Gygax's basement. Yeah. And it's really kind of cool and how it built up from there. So that's showing on Thursday night, right after our award ceremonies. It's called the Dreams in Gary's Basement. And it's all kinds of like vintage photos and footage, along with actually visiting and talking to the different people that were involved back there at the beginning of the gaming. So it was really, really cool.
Cool. My very fondest memory of learning about D&D was in the 80s when I was in high school. And the entire thing was in some guy's basement.
Oh, yeah.
12 of us playing marathon sessions. And it's like, where the hell do we have some? Why did I agree to run this session with all these freaking people in this game? It's like, this is mayhem.
Yep.
Especially if you could ever run a game. Four
like
people
I
is about the best.
Yeah, that was the same with actually me and Jack. That's what we did back in the 80s as well. You know, we were in somebody's basement or a garage or wherever. That's what you did.
Did you watch Stranger Things? Do you connect with it?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a bunch of kids in the 80s playing D&D, right? So, I felt like that was kind of written for my demographic. I don't know how everybody else caught on to it, but yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So, how often do you, these movies that they put in for the rotation for the film festival, how many times do you watch one of these movies? Do you just watch it once, or do you watch it multiple times before you pre-res it or whatever?
I typically watch them at least once. Most of the time, I end up watching it more than once because there's technical things I need to do with them before I can put them on too, right? So I end up watching them a lot more. And sometimes it's like a guy that works at a movie theater, right? Yeah, you've seen the beginning and the end of a film a dozen times. We have no idea how you got from one to the other. You missed a little of it. I do sit and watch every single frame of every film that gets submitted. And there's a lot. I get to know these films pretty well by the time things are done. And it's really amazing some of the talent that's out there. And it's a shame that more people don't get to see some of these indie films that, again, like on the short side, there just aren't that many outlets to watching shorts.
Hey, you're not calling Jack short, are you? that's my one joke I'll throw in today. So, yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I love the rise of film festivals all over the world. I mean, we have one of the largest ones here in Toronto, the After Dark Film Festival, which happens during TIFF, or just shortly after. And that's set a bar for a lot of things, because it's one of the coolest things to ever participate in. I've seen a couple of film festivals in a couple of other places, and it's just, I get a big kick out of the fact that there's basically in small town Oklahoma or whatever can have a film festival now.
Yeah, and you know, I worked with a group in Indiana before I moved down here to Florida called the Indiana Filmmakers Network. And I ran that organization for probably about 6 or 7 years.
I thought you were going to say you ran it into the ground, but okay.
No, I actually did hand it off to some guys that really, really stepped up and took it to the next level. So I'm really proud of that organization. Anyway, one of the things that I always did with that was I got to know all the filmmakers from around the area. And that's kind of the back end way how I got involved with Gen Con is one of the guys that worked for Gen Con was an old friend of mine from our old Rocky Horror Picture Show days. And he saw all my posts on social media about all this filmmaking stuff that I was doing and promoting all these different filmmakers and everything. And he needed somebody to run the film track at Gen Con. So he reached out to me. And I said, yeah, that sounds great, but I'm not going to just show movies. I want it to be a full-blown film festival. He's like, okay, let's go. And 13 years later, I'm still rinsing and repeating it. So,
excellent. Groovy, even. So, how many films get submitted on average to this film festival? I mean, obviously it changes year to year, and I would assume it's growing continuously after, 17 years or whatever you've been doing it?
Yeah, it was on a really great trajectory, and then COVID hit and just completely shot everything in the foot. So at that point, we were getting, I think, upwards to like 140, 150 films submitted, and as soon as COVID hit, that cut to less than half. And some of it was because people weren't out making films, and others was because they weren't going to be able to, they didn't feel comfortable going out and showing their films. So we're just now starting to recover from that. The productions are back up and going again, except for the ones, of course, that are SAG.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
You had to know that was going to come up.
Oh, yeah. And honestly, it doesn't really affect the indie stuff that much.
Right.
I think there's a lot of people who are not doing work more out of solidarity than out of requirement at this point.
Yeah.
We were on a really great trajectory until the pandemic just deflated everything for these type of events and for productions. So I hope that within the next year or so, we'll be back up to that. We're still not quite there yet. We're probably about, I'm feeling like 75, 80% of where we ought to be. But it's still, we're still getting some great films. So I almost think that when you lock filmmakers in a room with their editing bay for 2 years, that you end up with a better product than if they rushed it out. That's just kind of the feeling I have of seeing what I'm, you would think so, you know? Then again, I've seen people over edit too, so that's another thing there. But I've never seen a short film that couldn't be improved by cutting 3 minutes out of it, unless it's a 3 minute film, you know? But yeah, it's, everybody always thinks that a longer time run is better for a film. And you know, if you don't have the material, it's better to trim it and make it a concise, good, flowing story. You know?
Exactly. I mean, anthology TV shows prove it perfectly. If you've ever seen any half-decent Twilight Zone, Outer Limits for the older stuff, newer stuff, the Cabinet of Curiosities, and a host of other ones. In 45 minutes, you can deliver a good story. And it doesn't have to be 3.5 hours.
Yeah, just don't ever tell that to Peter Jackson. Yeah.
Shh. Peter Jackson's never going to... Well, maybe you never know. Although,
you never know.
Funniest thing. Have you seen the show Muppet Mayhem?
You know, I have not yet. It's on my list of things.
He has a guest appearance in it.
I think he is a Muppet, isn't he?
Might as well be. And you know that that's a slang term in England, right?
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, it's not a positive term. But...
Yeah, okay.
It's a good term to use when you want to really mess with someone. Especially if you're familiar with curse words in other languages and cultures, which I generally... Hey, if I'm going to meet somebody from another country, first thing I learn is how to swear in their language. And I try to teach mine as well.
Well, you got to find common ground, right?
Exactly. That was the thing. I mean, when I was in high school, I learned how to swear in 13 languages. Portuguese, Spanish, Italian, Cantonese, Russian, Saudi Arabian from when I don't remember what language it was, but I learned one term and it was like, never remembered how to do it again. But yeah, I mean, this is culture, this is combining stuff, right? So I'm going to throw a weird movie at you because when you said something and I don't know what it was, but it reminded me about something. Oh yeah, how long a movie can take to be done. Have you ever seen a movie called Mad God?
I don't think so.
By Phil Tippett. Just came out in 2021, but apparently he spent like 20 years working on this thing. It's a mostly stop-motion animation.
Well, yeah, it's Phil Tippett, yeah, so it would be a mostly stop-motion thing, yeah.
Yeah. It's an amazingly weird movie that you have to pay attention to understand. It's like, you can still not catch some things through the movie story, and it's like, wow, that's just cool-looking. But if you want to get something that's weird, it's got no dialogue in it. I think there's like two pieces of dialogue in the entire movie. And you can get the story just by watching what the guy does.
So what was it called again? I'm going to write this down.
Mad God.
Mad God.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to dig it out.
You should. I think it's screaming on at least one or two sites because I can't remember where I saw it. Oh, that's right. I got it on disc. Somebody actually gave it to me on DVD. It's like, yes, I love this stuff. But going back to the AFTRA. I always get that one mixed because there's something else that comes close to it, and I always remember that. And, AGFA. It's a scanner company. They make computer scanners. Sorry.
They also used to make photography film as well.
There you go. Yes, actually, that would be the same company.
Yeah, back in the Stone Age, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if they're around anymore. Oh, no, they are, because I saw a sign for them a little while ago driving by. It's like, I know that company. I don't know anything that they make anymore. Okay. But back to the current writers and actors strike. So obviously, like you were saying, it doesn't really affect much of the indie production stuff. But again, I've also noticed that some people are just sort of like in solidarity, not participating as much as they would have before. But in the same vein, I think it's harder for a lot of average people to know what the main issues are about it. And I only just recently found out about some of the main issues for the actors side of it. And it's like, oh, I support their right to strike on this one. The whole thing about using AI to replace actors and stuff like that is like, no. I mean, if you have an actor, you bring them in, you pay them to do the job. I mean, whether the top-notch performer taking $1 million or whatever for a movie, or the low-end guy who's making minimum wage just to show up and whatever, pay them. Don't rip them off by taking their... Oh, I was watching the trailer of Mad God right now. Don't take their likenesses and not pay them for it. And I know there's other issues as well, but that's the only one that's really stuck out to me. It's like, yeah, I support that, this issue.
Yeah, that one I think is... I almost think that the studios put that in so they have something to take out.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, the whole concept of pay-per-play makes sense. And what they were wanting to do was the opposite of that, which is bring in an actor, especially one of the things they had was the background people. I mean, these people are, most of them are not even union people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of them are SAG eligible, but most of them never pay the dues, never become. But they were going to basically scan those people and then use them in projects indefinitely.
I heard this one.
And I understand, and I know it's happening today, that they do scan them and they use them in that same project. And to me, well, yeah, they showed up that day. You can scan them and you've got a release for that project. You're good, right? But to, you know, in perpetuity makes no sense at all.
Unless you're paying them residuals for it.
Yeah, which they're not. I mean, these guys...
And that's the thing I had as a problem with. They gotta pay the residuals.
Yeah. And I know a lot of background actors, and it is...
It's not the easiest life.
No, it's not. Yeah. And most of them are doing it with the hope that eventually they'll get noticed and get drug into a speaking role of some sort, you know?
Exactly. It's a progression.
Yeah.
I almost went to become an extra in George Romero's, what was it, Survival of the Dead? It was one of the ones, because he did the last few of his movies up here in Toronto. So they had a casting call. It was an open call, ununionized, et cetera, yada, 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 yada. And I'm so glad after hearing about what the extras went through on that movie, not on purpose or against anybody, but I would not have been able to keep going on. Almost everybody caught cold, was sick for some time afterwards because they were there until like 2 a.m. and it was raining most of the time. And they're in zombie outfits all the time. Not the most comfortable environment to work in. But
yeah,
I would have gone just to have shits and giggles and have fun.
Yeah, I'm one of these people that almost never get sick. But if I'm on a set, I'm going to get sick. I mean, it just... I remember I was directing my first bit. I was doing a reality show. And first day, everything went great. Next day, I'm sick as a dog. And if I didn't have literally the best crew I could ever have dreamt for working with me, I don't know how anything would have gotten done. But it was just, what, for some reason, when you're in that environment, you're working crazy hours, you're surviving on basically sugar food, you know, to keep you going. And yeah.
Wait, you can't do that now?
You know,
I can't do that now.
I could do it a few years ago, but not as much anymore now.
Well, I tell people, I used to drink a lot of soda for maybe 10 years or so, 5 cans a day. That would be my average. Over the last 2 years, I have dropped that down considerably. I lost a little weight as a result, so it's good. But yeah, I know exactly how that works. I used to subsist on soda and cookies. which is why I talk about cookies a lot. Speaking of which, well, do you have a favorite cookie?
Do I have it? You know, fresh baked chocolate chip cookies are never bad.
That is correct.
I mean, when they're still warm coming out of the oven, that's a cookie. Anything that's got a wrapper around it is not a cookie to me. It's just processed food. But something that comes, I don't care if the ingredients are 100% the same. If a fresh out of the oven chocolate chip cookies, it's like crack.
You know? Yes, it is. But you're licking the bowl with the batter before it's cooked?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't do that because I like the taste of them when they're cooked and they're warm, all right? But, you know, they come in those little single serving tubes with, you know, 2 dozen of them in it. They're awesome.
Yeah, sorry. Single serving tube with 2 dozen in it? What's that?
Yeah, yeah. What, you don't eat 2 dozen cookies at a serving?
It's been known to happen, yes.
Yeah, okay, see, okay.
If you've ever, grandma cookies? What the hell were they? Little box, these small cookies, chocolate chip. These things were always soft. These were awesome. Oh, man, I can't remember the name of it anymore. Oh, well, doesn't matter. Cookies, yeah, I would eat half the box.
The other cookies that are good, but they're only good because it's a memory. There was a company called Archway. I have no idea if they still produce these. They were huge cookies. And they had some peanut butter cookies. The thing about those is my grandparents always had those. So it's one of those, when the grandkids came over, they'd break out the Archway peanut butter cookies. And I don't even know if they were that good a cookie, but they came from Grandma and Grandpa's house. So therefore, they were great, right?
They are no longer in production.
See, now I'm sad.
Yeah. They were acquired by a company called Lance, which trimmed the line down. Oh, no. They still have production arms, just 21 different things as opposed to the 100. Wait.
Okay.
Frosted animal crackers? Hold on. Animal crackers came from them?
I think interesting. Animal crackers is like a generic thing that a lot of people make. So.
Oh, okay. I just remember the old original animal crackers. And it's like, I like those things.
The ones that came in the little box that looked like it was a circus?
Yeah.
Train thing? Yeah.
I think they were terrible cookies, but I still ate them.
Well, yeah. Because you had to. And of course, yeah. You had to always, you know, bite the head off the animal first, right?
Also, yeah.
It's the only humane way to do that.
But when growing up as little kids, one of our neighbors, they used to like to burning them. And it's like, you're wasting perfectly good cookies. Why are you just burning them? Let me eat them. Then burn the box. I don't care what you do with it. Oh, well.
Those people probably went on to become serial killers or something. I don't know.
I would not be surprised remembering what they were like when I was crackers. Trying.
That's a sign, isn't it?
It is now.
Yeah.
I mean, it totally is now. But it's all good. So, back to Gen Con type things.
Yes.
Social media stuff. Do you do a lot? Do you do any?
I do a fair amount.
Okay. I'm always interested about the things that people do to try and promote the products, whatever service and stuff.
So Gen Con's a huge event. There's this year we're expecting nearly 70,000 people, which is almost reaching back to our pre-pandemic numbers. And to me, it's more about getting the word out to those 70,000 people that, hey, there's a film festival. I still get people after 13 years of doing this go, I didn't know they had a film festival. And that's kind of the thing for me. I can reach out to the rest of the world, but that doesn't help me because people are going to go to Gen Con are the ones that need to know what's going on at Gen Con. So there's social media, you know, pages and stuff for that. So I try to promote the films. Probably the hardest thing for me is to get butts in seats for features. I get some really amazing features and then not get enough people to show up to watch them. And it's mainly because, you know, a feature is an hour and a half to 2 hours. And what else could they be doing at Gen Con for an hour and a half to 2 hours, aside from watching a feature that they don't know hardly anything about, right? So I try to get the trailers out for the features so that people have a chance to make an informed decision. For the short film blocks, it's not as bad. Even though I could have a 2.5-hour short film block, people will still sign up for it because they'll go, well, I'll show up and I'll watch as many as I want and I'll turn around and leave. Right? So if they've got some other conflict, they can stick around for an hour of it. More often than not, they end up sticking around for the whole thing because they get engrossed in all the craziness. But people tend to take that gamble more for the short films than they do for a feature. So that's always been the challenge. I mean, I've had some stellar films that showed to an almost empty room. And, you know, and it's sad. And it's just a matter of getting the word out. It's, that doesn't happen nearly as much as it did in the early days. Because, again, I think I'm doing a better job of getting the word out. And over the years, we've developed enough of a reputation for the quality of films we're showing that people are encouraging each other to check them out. So, but it's always been an uphill battle.
I can relate to this because one of my favorite Canadian-made movies is called Wolf Cop and Wolf Cop 2. And I was at by the way, the other conventions between Gen Con and Dragon Con, and it is another big draw for guests, is Fan Expo in Toronto. The last 3 years, while they were operational, 140,000 people in the doors on average. It's like, it's a huge convention. But the production company that was putting out the movie had this midnight release in a theater that sits over 1,000 people. There was maybe 50. I was one of them because I enjoy that kind of schlocky movie, so I stayed to watch it. And it was like, oh, that was sad to see so many seats open.
I know. And you know, I had that exact same type of thing happen where I had a room that sat 400 people. It was a huge room. And you get like 50 people show up and it feels so empty. So now what I've done is I've reduced it down to a room that seats 200. We have 50 in a 200 seat room. It doesn't feel empty, mm-hmm. You know, because you always have that cushion between groups of people, right? People don't want to sit right next to each other. They always need three or four seats between. So they spread out and it doesn't feel nearly as empty. So that has actually become the standard now. Everything shows in a room that seats 200. If I have 200 tickets issued, it's sold out. But, you know, there's actually a few more seats than that. People show up and they'll find a seat. Or they'll stand at the back of the room, you know. And they, honestly, those are the best screens. When it's so crowded that people are standing at the back of the room, there's nothing like watching a film with, especially a genre film, right? With that type of a crowd.
Especially if they Google their asses off and double over laughing.
Yeah.
Love those kinds of movies. Love that kind of environment. Love that kind of vibe. It's like, people are there to have fun. Doesn't matter whether or not it's the best movie in the world, has the best story, best whatever, as long as you can enjoy it. I love movies where you can see that the people involved in it enjoyed it as well. Even if it was a $182 budget. I have seen this movie.
I have seen plenty of movies made for that or less.
Yes.
And actually, I've worked on a few of those. But and we get all ranges. I mean, I'll get films. I mean, by Hollywood standards, they're still low budget, you know, like $500,000 or something like that. And then I'll get films that are $1,200 or, mm-hmm. or they shot it on their iPhone, you know,
more popular now really figured out much that costs, than the old days. Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite movies to go to mention is Thanksgiving, which originally had a $3,000 budget, but then they threw another $1,000 just to have a stripper in the first 60 seconds saying, boobs in the first 60 seconds. Had nothing really to do with the movie, but they had some lady running by topless and bouncing, and it's like, okay.
That's for the European market.
It's for a world market. It appeals to as a marketing thing. And it's like, I had it at my shop to sell as well. Because I have a comic shop as well. So it was like, I'm going to sell this. I don't care if people don't buy it or not. I bought it for myself. And I just giggle at stuff like that. Oh, and speaking of the movie you're talking about with the hidden missing reel, their sequel movie, Thanksgiving 3, from 1 to 3, is about the search for the second movie.
Love it.
And absolutely it's about it. A killer turkey.
Well, of course it is.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah. So many fun things we can talk about in movies. So many different ones out there. What would you say is your favorite movie right now, without having to rank any of the ones that you have in your current festival, because that would be inappropriate and wrong?
Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know mine. I'll tell you mine. It's Evil Dead and Army of Darkness.
You can never go wrong with Bruce Campbell.
Absolutely not.
Somebody
mentioned one of my other favorite movies for Christmas, Trevenge.
I see that in the chat, yeah.
And it's a good short. It's 12 minutes. Same guys who did Hobo with a Shotgun did that movie. Which is also an awesome movie.
I go back and I think about all the independent stuff that I've seen. And there are some of them that have just been super amazing. But this one cut dates actually from before I started doing the film festival, so I never got to meet the filmmakers or anything. But there was a short film that was based on Star Wars called Troops.
I've seen that.
Yeah. To me, that was art. I mean, they took all the events that take place on Tatooine in the first film and set it to basically the cops show.
Bad boys. That movie was funny. Yeah,
it was art, you know? And it was done so well. I look at things like that. How do you improve on that sort of thing?
And the funny thing is shots from that movie keep showing up as memes all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, the guy who did that, I'm going to completely space his name at this point.
David Myers?
Is that right?
Oh, sorry, Kevin Rubio.
Yes. Ended up working for Lucasfilm.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I was just about to look up his IMDb. I just looked up the movie itself to see what else, but that's funny. Oh, he worked on the Clone Wars. Nice. Because I enjoyed that. Mind you, Power Rangers Samurai. Or Ben 10. But, you know, everybody has different things. I'm not judging people's interest in anything, right?
Everything's not for everyone, and just because somebody worked on something doesn't necessarily mean that they enjoyed working on it or enjoyed having to tell people they worked on that, right?
True enough. Or that it was bad, or that it was good. Either.
Okay, here's a film that goes back a little ways that I'm sure you've seen or heard of. Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death.
Love that movie! Adrian Barbeau's in that.
Yes, an old friend of mine actually worked in the sound department for that film.
Oh, nice.
The original working title was Piranha Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death, but I completely agree with the title change to Cannibal Women. I think it sells it so much better.
Absolutely.
But that was first time I ever encountered Bill Maher. He was the male lead in that, and he actually did a really good job.
Yes, he did.
I think it's a shame that he didn't keep doing that acting thing instead of going off and doing his talk show stuff. But hey, the guy's been successful at it, so we'll leave that be. But yeah.
Again, with the not everything for everyone, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of my motto for a lot of stuff because, like, I'm not gonna, whatever. I mean, I've seen some of the stuff I watch and enjoy, and it's like, I know other people don't like that stuff. But pretty much anything Shannon Tweed or Adrian Barbeau in, I'll probably watch.
Yeah, I remember him telling me a story because Shannon Tweed and Gene Simmons were an item at that time. I don't know if they still are because I don't cover that stuff. But
I think they are.
As a group, all of them went out bowling. So this guy had gone bowling with Gene Simmons. That was his claim to fame at that point. So
what's funny is I'm looking at the cast list on here, and there's a character named Dean Stockwell. So at first I thought that was the actor Dean Stockwell. I was like, no, that's a character name in this movie. Wait a sec. Did Dean Stockwell take his Hollywood name from this movie? Which would not surprise me in the least.
No, he was around before that.
Oh, I know. I'm just... He's an old fart, just like the rest of us, but maybe a little bit older. But I just thought that was funny as heck to see that. And it's like, wait a second. So what would you say is the first movie you ever saw that integrated you into horror?
Oh, God.
I know mine, because it's from the 70s.
Oh. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Excellent movie. All five of them. And the TV show. And the animated series. And yes,
can you milk a franchise or what, you know?
And yes, just recently there was a anthology series released of short stories based on the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes as well. And I'm not joking.
Horror comedy,
this came out this year.
Yeah, straight up horror, I'm not as big a fan, but horror comedy I love. Yeah, okay. It's just, you got to have tongue-in-cheek with it. And, of course, not Killer Tomatoes is just...
It's right up there.
A whole different animal of itself. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially in the second one with the introduction of FT, the fuzzy tomato. It's like, oh my God. Oh, and what's his face was in that? Adam's Family Guy.
Yes. John Astin.
Yes, John Astin. Yeah. He was the science professor or whatever. Mad scientist.
You know what? He actually ended up becoming one of the producers on them. And... a group of us met up with him at a Pizza Hut one night. Don't ask, it's just a really long story on how that happened. Everyone does, right? Yeah. And that subject of that film came up, and he says, you laugh what you want, but that was the best money he made on any investment he ever did in Hollywood.
Yeah. I mean, horror movies, genre movies, all of these low-budget movies... They have the biggest bang for buck on return for investment. I mean, you spend $5,000 making a movie, you sell video sales, it goes through, it makes over $100,000 worth in sales, and then it comes into residuals into aftermarket replay on the reps theaters or now on Tubi. Streaming services,
yeah.
And it still makes money. Because these old cheesy movies, our nostalgia goes into it. We love that stuff. Yeah. Oh, hey, look at that. Is there anything you'd like to share as far as how people can stalk you, find out more about Gen Con, etc.?
For Gen Con, definitely go to GenCon.com. That's kind of straightforward. And check out all the events that are going on there. I think there's upwards like 20,000 events happening over the four-day weekend. It's insane. It's gamers. Cosplay,
art.
It's art. There's a writer symposium there. There's everything going on at Gen Con. If you can't find something to do at Gen Con, you probably should never go to any convention ever.
Yes.
And you know, again, I run the film festival, so stop by. The convention itself takes place in the Indianapolis Convention Center, or the Indiana Convention Center in Indianapolis. That's where the main events are happening, but we also have stuff happening at Lucas Oil Stadium where the Indianapolis Colts play. They actually take over the field for that. It's huge. Food trucks everywhere. And our part of it, the film festival, takes place in the Westin Hotel, which is connected with a sky bridge to the convention center. And basically we take over every downtown hotel in Indianapolis with 70,000 people. It's mayhem. It's fun. Doesn't quite get as crazy as, say, a Dragon Con does, but it's... Dragon Con's a unique animal because it doesn't have a convention center attached to it. It all takes place in the hotels. So therefore, and these are mammoth hotels as well. These are gamers. So you'll see this huge ballroom full of tables, but people sitting down playing games. You know, it's... actually fairly orderly in some areas, you know. But stop in, see the films. Most cases, you don't even need a ticket to see the film. You need a badge for the convention, obviously.
We don't need no stinking badgers. Sorry. Had to do that.
And, of course, you know, all the social media stuff that's out there for Gen Con, there's, you know, do a Google, you'll find all that. And if you have a film, we start submissions in January, getting ready for the next year. So I already have a folder of things for next year started. I mean, that's how this works. Look us up on filmfreeway.com for submitting films, and everybody has a great time. All the filmmakers, we try to get them as involved as possible. I've got panels, I've got meet and greets, everything. And then there's even a little pub around the corner we try to drag everybody to if we can. So,
oh, just one?
So it's always fun. Yep. That's what it's all about.
Oh, okay.
And so I see the link for the film festival. There you go.
Yeah, Jack's posting the chat, the links there. He's on the job. He's doing it right.
Thank you, Jack.
So I have a very fond memory of going to Gen Con a couple of times when it was in Wisconsin. Haven't been there since then. One of the worst memories I have is driving over the lake to get back home. It was the stupidest decision ever because it took twice as long to get home.
You went up and over?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My buddy decided to make the driving choice there. And it's like, at that time, it was like, I'm young. I still haven't really read maps well enough to say, that doesn't look right, but whatever.
He was driving. Scenic.
It was very scenic, actually. Yeah. At, 10 at night until we get back home at about 5 hours later. I was like, oh, my God. Never do that again. Ever. But one of the neatest memories that I do have about that Gen Con was after the show, the one night, we're just doing our stuff or whatever, and the doors are being closed to the dealer's room and whatever, and out in the hallway are these group of people. I don't have very strong memories of who they were or what they looked like or whatever, but they had this like 20-foot table set up with all the valley, hills, rivers, and things going on, and all the miniatures on it. And they're doing miniature war game. They're doing Warhammer. And it's like, we're sitting there watching this for about an hour. And it's like, the entire time they have moved maybe 50 pieces, half of an inch, for the entire time of their turn. I was like, that's way too much more patience than I have to play that game. But there are people out there.
There are, and there will be a lot of them in Indianapolis in about 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd love to come by and visit, but that is not in the books right now.
Well, when you do get down here, say hey.
I most certainly will. I'm going to check out the movie film festival online because that sounds like pantloads of fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Definitely check that out. Again, everybody, just go to Gen Con, log into the online version of it, and start looking for events, and you'll find film festival events there. And basically, you just get a pass. We'll send you a link and a password in order to log into it, and you can watch as many of those films as you want over the course of 4 days.
Cool. So, Chuck, thanks for coming on and being a guest. It's been an awesome show.
Thanks for having me.
Everybody out there in After It Rolon, you have fun. Come back again every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or whatever the hell time it is, wherever the heck you are. Check us out on the Facebook, check us out on the Instagram, and Threads. I think we're going to do Threads. I don't know about Twitter. Still on Twitter, but I don't know how long, much longer. Come back again every day Wednesday. Check us out on the archive at afterrot.com. And this episode will be posted up in the next night or two. And have fun, be well, do all that stuff that makes important things in life, that makes good decisions going forward.